Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I'm your lovely host, Todd Conklin. I hope you're having the best day ever. It is mid-October, baby. It's happening. I knew it would, too. So if you're in North America listening to this, you know right now, and Europe, too. I'm not excluding you. You know that we are screaming into winter, which I can't decide if it's a great time of year or not a great time of year. I just don't know, except that I know that the weather gets kind of crappy, and then driving becomes a problem, and then we've got all this going on. So October is October is October, and that's the way it will be. But on this journey, I think we'll have some fun. Hey, today's podcast is great, but before we get started, I should tell you, I just got back from the Human and Organizational Performance Summit in Houston, Texas. Great meeting, couple hundred people, incredible food and buffets. I mean, I'm sure they had a meeting too, but I was too busy interested in the lunches because they were remarkable. Now, it's a great meeting, to be really fair. It's a remarkable opportunity for several organizations to get together and just share information about how they look at human performance, high reliability, organizational performance, and they've taken to calling it the HOP conference, HOP, and it's a clever name. But, you know, as we all suffer in this new view family to high reliability, human performance, safety world, we can't really figure out a name for what the new push is, so we're sort of stuck with what we have. But the meeting was great. To all the friends I saw while I was there, thank you. To everyone I saw and didn't get to talk to, thank you even more. To those of you who didn't get to be there but wanted to be there, we missed you horribly, and it wasn't the same meeting without you. For those of you who have no clue what I'm talking about, I'm not sure, since you don't know about it, you missed it. But it was a great meeting. And it is kind of cool for one reason. It's a collaborative environment where people can get together and really talk about this journey that everybody's on. And they get to build confidence and be reinforced and understand what's happening and why it's happening. And that's really an important part of what happens. It's that sense of community that keeps us going. And it was a great meeting because on that journey, almost all the phases were represented. There were organizations that were brand new into the new view and really very curious what all this means, really fixated on how we do it, asking questions like, are there tools we can start immediately, which is never that good of an idea because tools without a problem are kind of a waste of time. There were groups that were kind of midpoint where they were really interested in error and error reduction and how important it was to identify all the potential places where error could happen, error traps, error likely situations. And that phase of development is an important one because I remember it well. If we just did a better job at sort of driving errors out of the system, we'd have fewer accidents, and we know that's not all true either. There were organizations that were really far along and were looking programmatically at learning and investigations. Bob Edwards did a great session on learning teams, a couple days long. I mean, it was a big, deep session on learning teams. And there were organizations that I just am blown away with that are farther along than anybody else and really are at a point now where they're benefiting additionally. They were already super safe organizations, but they're now benefiting additionally from being even safer. And where those people are on that journey is all perfect. I mean, none of those places are wrong, and none of them are bad. Family One safety, compliance-based safety, isn't wrong or bad. It's just a maturity model, a developmental model that says you start and move towards the new way. And along that journey, there are many mileposts that other organizations can share what they've learned at that point and tell you, reinforce for you, maybe is a better word, where you are in that overall journey. And that sense of community is invaluable. In fact, that sense of community is what makes a meeting like that really go. And this meeting, the guys at ORCHSE did a fabulous job providing sort of support and lots of information. All in all, it was a great time and a great meeting. And again, I want to thank you for allowing me the opportunity to hang out with you. thanks for listening to the stuff I had to say. You know, it was an interesting conversation. I'll probably talk more about some of those ideas in podcast. I think it's a good place to talk about it. But more importantly, thanks for sharing with me and thanks for sharing with each other. Building that community is really, really valuable. And so that's important. So now let's talk about today's podcast, because that's fun, too. Today's podcast is kind of weird. I think you'll like it. It's kind of fun, really. Jim Howe and I were at this hop conference, and Jim said, I want to interview you. Now, if you don't know Jim Howe, and you've probably heard his podcast, he's just this amazing guy. It's hard to describe him other than just he's just an amazing guy. He's involved. He's concerned. He's remarkably smart. He's incredibly experienced. And he's super fun. I mean, that's pretty much all the tests you need. That meets you into the amazing guy criteria, right? And he said, I want to interview you. So we sat at the table in the back of this giant ballroom with piping and draping and big speakers. And we just did a little interview. And he had a series of questions that he was going to ask me. He was going to ask them to me anyway. But he decided he wanted to do it on microphone for the podcast. And, you know, I'm always desperately looking for stuff to put on the podcast. So I said, why not? Let's do it, man. And so we had about, I don't know, 15 minutes before the next presentation. And the next presentation was going to talk about accident investigation, which I hear you. You want podcasts on that. And I did make some big inroads to get some accident investigation people on this podcast. So Jim started asking a series of questions. What follows are those questions. So listen carefully. I don't think the audio is great, but it's not terrible. And it's kind of fun because it was at the conference. What's best about this is how this ends. It just ends. And the reason it just ends is because we both had to go and present. So we had to leave. But we'll put a closer on it and make it kind of a nice podcast. Enjoy this. This is fun. As always, I can't thank you enough for being a part of this podcast. It's been super fun. And the journey's amazing. Enjoy. Jim asked pretty hard questions. So listen carefully and see what happens. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, Jim Howe, running his own podcast in Houston, Texas, on a beautiful Wednesday morning.
Okay, Mr. Conklin, it's good to have you here. We've been trying to schedule this for some time.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jim.
I'm glad you could make it.
And thank you for flying me in your private jet and putting me up in your mansion.
Anytime.
You're welcome.
Somebody of your caliber,
that's what we do.
Okay, so this week you talked about the black line and blue line.
Right.
You talked about the factors that influence the blue line. And you always talk about latent conditions.
Right.
And people get in these discussions about errors and violations.
Right.
Are latent conditions errors or violations?
They're neither.
What are
conditions?
They?
So, okay. I hate the fact that we've somehow taken our industry and sent the signal that the only tool we have to fix safety is behavior. And so, I looked desperately for a word that was the opposite of behavior. And here's what I decided. Most accidents happen because a set of conditions exist that create the potential outcome. Now, if you want to be fancy engineers, we could talk about energy present. If you want to be a normal guy, you could talk about the fact that there's sharp crap and it cuts hands. Mm-hmm. The behavior simply triggers the conditions. If the sharp stuff's not there, then I can't cut my hand. When I talk about conditions and errors and violations, they're really separate. We're terrible at managing both error and violation because they're both, for the most part, unintentional deviations from an expected outcome. And what makes me crazy is that the outcome determines whether an action is an error or a brilliant process improvement. So we are terrible at managing behaviors, but we're actually quite good at managing conditions. So conditions are simply, they're agnostic. They're simply things that are in your system that when combined in whatever way, alone or together, can create the bad outcome. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. That's great. How do we know if we're depending, we have over-dependence on procedures, and how do we know if we're finding the latent conditions or inappropriately using procedures?
So that's three questions, but it's really good.
You can ask whichever one you think is easiest.
Validate, verify, validate, verify, validate, verify. But let's take it this way. Rote procedural adherence, or expectation of rote procedural adherence, does three things. It limits worker creativity. It encourages violation. And it reduces the worker's competency to manage risk. So when we put workers into a position where we ask them not to think but to be a robot, in
mindless.
Yeah. Well, the word I want to say, but I'm trying to think of another word, is we're dehumanizing the worker in order to gain obedience and stability. However, in saying that, the one thing I can assure you is the dehumanized, mindless, robotic worker is being relied upon to adaptively identify and solve problems constantly.
Right.
So the challenge is with procedures, and I'm not sure where I am with it, but the challenge is that if we rely only on procedures, we're assuming that safety exists only on paper. And giving up the fact that really what workers do is constantly adaptively solve problems. If we rely only on the worker, then we lose the ability to sort of understand and manage over time the way work is done. But where I'd really push you in kind of the Frederick Taylor vein, and this is a word I want you guys, especially Jim, with your background, to think about, is I think what happens is we send the worker a signal that there's only one right way to do work. And I think that's really wrong. But I could be wrong. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
We're at a conference.
Right. We are. We are. So when are procedures appropriate?
When the work is incredibly stable, so it's always really done the same way and there's very little variability in it, right? So we could use Ford making the F-150 pickup truck, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The one thing we know is that's incredibly stable production because they do the same thing a million, billion, zillion times. And what's happened is they've engineered much of the variability out of the program. There's still variability, but much of it's gone. Procedures might work then. Procedures are very handy when something has to be done correctly and in a certain order, right? Like, so the pre-flight check for an airplane, that's a good idea. And I think procedures are really important when the worker is expected to do work that they may or may not have a lot of familiarity with, and they don't really know. They know what to do, but they often don't know what order to do it in, then a procedure makes sense. And I can make a pretty good case that, you know, like when we checked into this hotel, I want the check-in clerk to follow the procedure because at the end of the check-in experience, I want to get a key to a room that doesn't have anybody else in it and has been cleaned and has toilet paper.
Right. But you know what?
Or a fruit
My
basket.
Favorite check-in procedure in history, I went into a hotel in Oregon, in Portland. The driver was dropping me off. I walked up to the front desk. They handed me the key. They said, "Hello, Mr. Howe, here's your key. You're in room such and such. Whenever you get a chance and it's convenient, come down and we'll do the rest of check-in."
See, that's brilliant.
And that skipped all those other
yeah,
steps.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. I love that.
And so that was interesting.
That's brilliant.
People think that that aviation is so safe principally because of checklists. And John Gray's presentation this week, who does safety for the air traffic controllers,
right,
showed us information, and the variability was amazing.
Yeah.
Because people think that pilots and the whole system is very proceduralized and people strictly adhere to the procedures. And he helped us understand and showed us charts and maps and GPS data and so on and so forth to show how pilots and air traffic controllers were adapting because of weather, planes
yeah.
were late.
Oh, yeah, of course. I didn't even think of that.
All sorts of things.
I didn't think of that. Every time there's a weather event in Chicago, air traffic controllers lose their ability to do rote compliance to procedures because they're adaptively trying to get a million planes either up or down.
Right.
And it seems like down would be more important than up.
Right.
Just,
and there's
I'm no genius.
And there's an ideal flight path, but then planes are late. You're trying to bring in a certain number of planes. The weather, there's a thunderstorm coming in a half hour. We have to close the runways.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we're trying to bring planes in more efficiently and safely.
Yeah, and so we'll trade off road compliance and reliability for efficiency.
And we'll be a little closer to the margin.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
Right, right.
What else, man? Have you had a good conference?
It's been a great conference,
What do you think was the best part of this conference this year?
I think the diversity of participants that was really helpful. I heard a lot of comments on that it was great that there were different organizations doing a lot of different things and learning from one another.
Yeah.
Not just having energy or not just having paper or aluminum or whatever, or GE or whatever. So that was a great spot. You talked in you had a 5-minute safety reminder on stop work.
Oh, yeah. My favorite thing to talk about.
And you talked about concerns about stop work, that we don't rely on it, over-rely on it, and rely on it as a last line of defense kind of thing. And on the other hand, it seems like it's a good idea that workers are encouraged to stop when they're not sure and they have the opportunity to do that, while at the same time not over-rely. How does an organization do that?
Well, I think you answered that question. I think you have to have stop work. Stop work authority is vital. It means everything. The problem is you can't rely on stop work. If a worker calls stop work, every other defense failed. And that's true and terrible, and that's probably enough of an argument. But what I think about stop work is that it's so retrospective in nature.
Right.
The only time we hold people to account for calling stop work is after something bad has happened.
Right.
When's the last time you stopped a successful line and said, you guys are all in trouble because nobody called stop work? Well, if nothing happened, there's no reason to call stop work. So I think it's a little goofy, and it's awfully simple. I mean, it's just simple, and it's mean, kind of. What else? Anything else good?
Right. It sounds like an opportunity, though, for during the time when workers are trying to adapt, to give them the opportunity to sort of take a break while they're trying to adapt and figure out difficult situations.
So you can change it to pause. A lot of people say pause.
Pause,
that's less formal.
That's right.
I'm really fixated on when we do high-risk planning, we negotiate, or we're playing with this, we're experimenting, negotiating go, no-go criteria in the planning. So you actually do your stop work discussion before you do the work, and you basically say what conditions, if exist, would cause us to not do this job. So you're pre-identifying the conditions. So let's say, you've got lack of breathable air. So if you're in a respirator, lack of breathable air, temperatures above 94. I'm making this up, you guys, so don't hold me.
Pressure's above this.
Yeah, pressure's above this. If these three conditions exist, we will stop the job. Then you actually remove the onus for determining stop work off the back of the worker and shift it to actually the organization that's managing the work. That seems to be a million times more successful.
And it's interesting because in reality, I heard people talk, a couple of organizations talking about this week, and said at times there's a tendency to say, well, if the stop work limit is X, Todd and I are doing the job. I think it's just under that.
Yeah, we're literally 12 feet.
And then they made us leave, and we had to go. We probably would have stayed there the rest of the day. And the way the stop work conversation ended on our way walking up to the place to give the presentation was that adaptive nature of stop work is really hard because you don't really have data on whether the job is successful or whether the job's going to fail until after the decisions have been made. And that was a fun conversation. It's a short podcast, but I just wanted you to hear it. It was a fun conversation, and it was just fun that Jim wanted to be a part of it in the way where he was the interviewer and I was the interviewee, turning the tables, if you will. Again, that opportunity to build that community of thought in person was really fun, but it reinforced me to how important it is to build the community we're building now. So there's so many good things going on and so many interesting podcasts coming up. I almost can't wait for you to hear the next couple of them. There's some really great ones. Jim Barker's coming back. That's why the request teaser sort of when I put that back up and people started listening to it, that got Jim interested in coming back, and Jim had some stuff to say. And Jim wanted to talk about how people know they're right. And that podcast, it's going to blow you away. Can't even wait. Can't even wait. Until then, thank you for your time. As always, it's such a treat to get to hang out with you. I mean it. I really mean it. As always, learn something new every day. Learn more stuff than normal. Have a lot of fun. And for goodness sakes, be safe.